broadcasting live from atop the Rocky Mountains, the crossroads of the West. You are listening to the Liberty Roundtable Radio Talk Show.
All right. Happy to have you along, my fellow Americans. Sam Bushman live on your radio. Hard-hitting news the networks refuse to use, no doubt, continues now. This is the broadcast for August 24th in the year of our Lord, 2023. This is Hour 2 at 2, and the goal always to protect life, liberty, and property, to promote God, family, and country, to do so on your radio in the traditions of our founding fathers. Yes, indeed, ladies and gentlemen, we reject revolution. Unless it's a Jesus revolution, then we're in. Actually, we believe we can restore the republic peacefully through a restoration process, ladies and gentlemen. We can peacefully restore the republic. By the way, just in case you're wondering, it's my humble opinion that hands down, Vivek Ramaswamy and Nikki Haley won the debate big time. The rest were completely sidelined, kind of irrelevant. Most of them were just old men on the stage, all grumpy and whatever. Nikki had a good showing, even though I don't agree with her on a lot of things. But hands down, Vivek Ramaswamy stole the show. There's no debating it. But I don't want to get into the details of the debate right this second. I want to talk about the economy. I want to talk about China. I want to talk about climate change, but all in an economic reality framework. Pete Sepp with me, president of the National Taxpayers Union. The NTU is the voice of American taxpayers, mobilizing elected officials and citizens on behalf of tax reform. Imagine that. NTU.org. Pete Sepp, welcome back, sir.
Great to be here.
All right, let's talk about the debate and a few things of interest here. Number one, in the debate, everybody had a lot of things to say about the economy. They talked about China. They talked about climate change, mostly in relation to the economy. And here's what Vivek said. He said, hey, look, climate change is a hoax. He said, look, economically speaking, this climate change has been used to put a wet blanket over the economy. And what we need to do is get rid of that wet blanket of climate change. We need to frack. We need to drill. We need to do all things that create prosperity. In fact, you cannot have prosperity if you don't have fossil fuel. And he basically made the point. Everybody was against him on it. The people love him. Donald loves him. But it seems like the rest of the debate stage hated him. I don't want to drag you into that discussion, but I do want to focus on the points that he made economically speaking, sir.
Yeah, it is important to focus on that because behind the scenes, you would think just watching Congress that nothing is happening on climate change policy at all. But if you look at the executive branch, the rulemakings that are being issued by the Environmental Protection Agency, by Department of Energy, by Department of Transportation, all of these federal agencies are getting into climate change policies that are going to cost taxpayers dearly. Many of your listeners may remember the Clean Power Plan proposed by Barack Obama and his administration. Fortunately, major elements of that were blocked, not only by court action, but also by Congress itself saying, slow down here. We can't just instantly flip the equivalent of a light switch, to use a power analogy, and say, yay, we're going to use nothing but wind and solar power to produce all of our electricity. Well, the Barack Obama administration was a good 10 years ago now, longer than that, actually. And some of the same problems are still in place. We can't suddenly mandate by law or by regulation that a certain percentage of our electricity is going to get generated from non-fossil fuel sources, and it happens. Unfortunately, if you do that, you also drag along with you higher taxes, more government subsidies, draconian regulations that limit people's freedom, and in the process limit economic development. I think that was a point that Ramaswamy was trying to make in the limited period of time he had, and we have got to watch what's going on in this current administration to see how taxpayers are endangered. That Clean Power Plan rule that Obama had is back now in a different form. And they are setting goals such as within 10 to 20 years, there's going to be a massive shift in how we get our electricity in this country. I'm here to say, unless markets evolve at the pace that is best suited to the American people and the technological capacity, we are going to see big government in a way we never have, putting its hand on the scales and putting its foot on our backs.
Let's talk about Congress, because you mentioned a bunch of agencies in the executive branch doubling down on all this, quote, rulemaking or mandates and everything else, but that isn't law. What is Congress saying about this? Is Congress going to really rein this in? What are the talks behind the scenes about this, Pete? Because, look, I'm not here to debate whether it's good or bad at this point. I'm here to debate who has the authority and how it will actually go down in the real world, right?
Yes, yes. Well, of course, there is the third branch of government, the judiciary, where a lot of this could play out. You could see many lawsuits from members of Congress, from the private sector, saying, yeah, the government doesn't have that authority. In fact, there's a major case before the Supreme Court right now about what's called Chevron deference. That's a doctrine that was established a couple of decades ago by the courts to say, well, if Congress passes a law and a federal agency implements it, and there were major parts of the law Congress passed that were kind of vague or left up to the regulatory agencies, then we have to have deference to the executive branch in implementing that law. Well, lo and behold, given that kind of latitude, agencies have gone wild. And the current case before the Supreme Court now, Loper-Bright, as it's called, it involves Department of Commerce regulations and their authority over fishing. But the whole Chevron deference doctrine is on the line right now. And we're hoping, and in fact, our organization is filing a friend of a court brief in the case, that it's going to be clarified and dramatically scaled back so that agencies no longer overexert their authority. But we're not necessarily going to see a decision on that for a while, and the decision may not turn out the way we like. So we're going to have to make sure Congress is also pushing back through things like votes on these rules to repeal them under the Congressional Review Act. The House of Representatives, controlled by Republicans, will certainly do that. What would happen in the Senate? Well, that's going to be a lot more difficult, getting conservative and moderate Democrats to come along with Republicans in the upper chamber. That's where the challenge is going to be.
They talked some about the environment, and I wanted to highlight that because, look, you know, agree or disagree on the debate of climate change, the fact is we've got to have the proper bodies in government making the laws, and the legislative body needs to jealously guard their responsibilities. I agree that the courts can play a role in terms of interpretation, etc., but Congress has a responsibility to get it right. And if things are way off the rails, just waiting for the court to do their deal isn't the right answer. The right answer is to come back and say, look, this is the law, this is what we mean. Don't play games and try to create law from downstream administrative offices pretending that somehow you have legislative authority under the guise of some of these other things. So that's where I would say Congress needs to speak out, and hopefully they will on much of this. But they also talked about China being a great threat. And I don't want to get into the debate about, you know, the communists and all that, except to say right this minute, you know, they're saying, hey, this is a threat economically speaking. It's a serious problem. For example, at the same time they're having this debate saying China is the big threat, which I agree that it is, but several countries rallied against the United States dollar just yesterday at what they call the Brazil, Russia, India, China, and South Africa. They call it the BRICS Summit in South Africa. They all basically said, look, we want to jettison the dollar here. We're sick of the dollar. We're sick of Americans trying to take control of everything, and we want to do something different. So they're talking about using other currencies and or a digital currency that would circumvent the dollar. That's real, Pete.
Yes, and that's a direct consequence of our economic policy as well as our weak fiscal policy. The years of overspending among Republicans and Democrats, the lack of ingenuity when it comes to competing with countries like China instead of trying to emulate China, which subsidizes fake industries. Basically, they're government run, and they pour lots of resources into competing with our private industries. One of the responses was this CHIPS Act. Well, let's pour a lot of tax dollars into subsidizing manufacturing here. Well, here's a better idea. How about we keep taxes and regulations low so that these companies can do it on their own? That is the smart path. And yet, on that debate stage, you had plenty of Republicans basically saying, well, there's not much we can do to compete with China except emulate them. I think that's absolutely wrong.
All right, there you have it. I think that's critical, and it is a direct result. And I think the answer is for Americans to reduce our spending, to get a handle on things, to bring in more than we spend. The answer is to realize that, you know what, it's not a political discussion here, ladies and gentlemen. It's not a left-right thing. It is an American thing to say, let's live within our means and show the world that we have taken responsibility. Let's show the next generations, our children, that we are responsible, not only individually, but as a country. Hey, skip the break for me, will you? Pete Sepp with me. He's with NTU.org, the president thereof, if you will. Ron Paul was not in the debate last night, but he issued an email that I find relevant also, Pete. He says this, headline, The Coming Collapse. Please take a moment today to contact your lawmakers and demand that they pass our bill to audit the Federal Reserve. In other words, Ron's point is we've got to have accountability, and it starts with our money and accountability for our money. What do you say to Ron?
Absolutely, we should. And coming back to the BRICS conference you mentioned, Sam, this is directly relevant to the policy challenges we are facing right now. If the United States is to remain an economic leader and competitive with countries like China and eventually India, we need not only a solid currency, we need a central bank that's going to be accountable much more so to Congress and the American people than it currently is. We need to know as well some daylight into the inner workings of the Federal Reserve, because I'll tell you, the Fed creates these windows, for example, that's the parlance in the financial world, whenever there's a massive economic crisis, opening the floodgates where it buys up huge chunks of United States government debt to try to stabilize the economy. Well, what kind of capacity does the Fed have to do that in the future? What happens when the next borrowing crisis hits us? And the fact that we've been downgraded again with our sovereign credit rating by one of the rating agencies, Fitch, that brings it into much nearer focus about who and what tools are available if the next crisis hits. And auditing the Fed is a good place to begin that discussion.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is serious. When these countries get together in BRICS and then the U.S. credit rating downgraded is an ominous sign for taxpayers. There's an article about that at NTU.org, by the way, if you want to check out that incredible article written by Andrew Wilford, Pete.
Yes, indeed. This is all about many of the most important aspects of tariffs, of overspending on the part of the federal government, of currency control, of the fact that China is an owner of a large chunk of the U.S. government's debt. Sure, there are many other countries involved, United Kingdom, Germany, others, but eventually, no matter who owns U.S. government debt, there will be a capacity point among countries and their willingness to buy up our debt. And that reckoning is coming very, very soon. It's not being a doomsday person or a prepper to say, oh, start digging a hole, folks. Actually, it's a call to action for folks to say, listen, we don't want the United States relegated to second power status permanently, and we are running out of time. with the confluence of entitlement programs, Social Security and Medicare, and their so-called trust funds running out pretty rapidly. We're within a 10 to 12 year window on several of those programs of them going belly up and making massive tax increases or massive benefit cuts a near reality. Those things need to be addressed. And I have to say, you heard very little about the Social Security and Medicare crisis on the debate stage last night. I seem to recall just Mike Pence actually speaking up about it in detail.
All right, there's a lot to discuss and not enough time with Pete to discuss it all. But NTU's Pete Sepp on your radio now discussing tech policy legal battles. This is an important issue, too, that no one talked about during the debate. You kind of wonder why. This is critical right now, Pete.
Yes, it certainly is. Nobody likes big tech 100% of the time. You know, granted, there's something that one of these platforms does in your daily business or your personal life that ticks you off, and rightfully so. Unfortunately, that is a miscue for some politicians to say, you know what, let's really regulate these firms into the ground. We can't do anything about TikTok or any of the other foreign competitors, so let's beat up on our own tech companies. And that's all too often what happens in the United States. The Department of Justice, the Federal Trade Commission are constantly suing tech companies, really at the behest of other tech companies who feel that somehow they're not getting as good a deal for advertising online, or that their search results are not being properly prioritized. And so the government does the bidding of disgruntled competitors, and suddenly you have a situation where the FTC and the DOJ are suing companies all across the economy, not because they're gouging consumers or failing to protect their privacy, but because there's not enough well-defined competition. And the competition is, again, something that angry competitors are saying is not existing. The consumer's welfare is just fine. It's just the pocketbooks of some companies are a little thinner than others, and they want to bring in the government on their side to harass those better off companies. That's a very dangerous situation, especially in the hands of someone like the FTC's chairman, Lina Khan, who effectively believes that major portions of the economy should be controlled from Washington, D.C. We need less of that, not more of that. And you're right, Sam, I didn't hear much about that at all on the debate stage last night.
Sadly, those are the things that should have been covered, in my humble opinion, ladies and gentlemen, because they're most critical to we, the American people, lowering taxes, living within our means, finding ways to deal with inflation appropriately. That's really what should have been discussed, tech policy and how they're gaining way too much power, way too much control. But another topic I found interesting, they mentioned it, but they didn't dig in like they should have. The term is called Bidenomics. And NTU's Brandon Arnold discusses Bidenomics on a bunch of different broadcasts. They should have drilled in a little bit more. They kind of sideswiped Joe Biden and said, oh, Bidenomics are horrible. But they didn't really dig into anything that mattered like you guys do, Pete.
Yes. Some of the real problems when you dig right down into Bidenomics have to do with pro-inflationary versus anti-inflationary policies, price controls, which were a fantasy back when Republican Richard Nixon proposed them. He even admitted it in private conversations. You have wage controls and the opposite, wage inflation, that federal policies try to manipulate. No good. You know, those are the kinds of things that we could have asked in sequence of all of the candidates, maybe five questions. What's the ideal personal and corporate tax rate total at the federal level in this country, and how would you get to it? A second question would be, how would you roll back all of the price controls and restrictions that the Biden administration and others have imposed over the years. What specifically would you begin rolling back in terms of excessive federal spending, considering that several people on that stage voted for trillions of dollars in additional federal spending? Where would they start the cutting? You know, those are the kinds of specific questions those folks need to start answering, rather than, well, Bidenomics has been a disaster for the middle class. We know that. How do we get from disaster to recovery? And NTU has been
answered most of them by saying he would abolish a ton of government agencies, and they kind of mocked him for it and said, "Oh, it's your lack of experience. You don't have a clue, Vivek." But my response to them is their experience got us $32 trillion in debt. And their experience got us in a couple of $100 trillion in debt when it comes to unfunded liabilities. So I'm not sure that I like their experience if we're going to play games with experience. This guy is a self-made billionaire. I think he has a little bit of experience there. Let's not discount it at all. Their experience has led us off of a cliff like lemmings. And so I don't mean to just defend Vivek as a person per se, but I am saying at least he's got an idea that says, hey, let's go ahead and increase drilling and do all these environmental things that we got to have it to build the economy. Let's go ahead and get rid of all these government agencies and save a bunch of money. I mean, at least that's a start and a solution-oriented position to take, rather than, oh, man, Bidenomics are bad and just put me in charge and I'll fix it. Well, those are the old men that have broke it.
Yes, that's exactly right, Sam. And to those folks on the stage who were mocking that, I would say, listen, these were once friendly parlor discussions about what would you get rid of in government if you were president. Well, the parlor discussions are over. We are either going to have this conversation forced on us at the worst possible time. You and I have talked about this with Social Security. If we don't plan on reforms right now, in 8 to 10 years from now, there's going to be a 30% increase in taxes or a 30% cut in benefits. Which do we want to do? Have a thoughtful conversation about which federal agencies are serving a useful purpose, which aren't. How do we restructure the federal government rationally? Are we going to do that? Or are we going to wait for a default on our national debt or all the credit rate agencies downgrading us and then have it forced on us? Which choice are we going to make?
When you just yell somebody doesn't have experience, we do and you don't, but their record betrays them, they're out of arguments, Pete.
Yes. Yes, they are. And I don't think it's wrong at all to say, how about we evaluate all of these programs in the federal government, figure out which ones are working, which ones aren't, start paring back. You know, Texas, a very large state with a very sophisticated government, does this on a systematic basis. They call it the Sunset Commission, which reviews all of the programs at the state level in Texas on a periodic basis, evaluates them by a number of metrics, makes recommendations to the legislature for defunding or cutting funding, eliminating entirely, scaling back, whatever. But they have a process in place like that. Why not start with something like that at the federal level? It's not a crazy idea.
It's not, ladies and gentlemen. If you want people who are rational, reasonable, and who literally provide think tank behind the scenes reports and intelligence that drill into this, all you got to do is go to NTU.org. Pete, I know we were supposed to let you go at 30. I'm hoping you got a couple of more minutes. What I want to do is rate the congressman really quick according to the NTU scorecard. Those on the stage talking about the economy, we can see where they really stand, with a couple of exceptions. For example, Vivek isn't there, but he's so bold in what he says he would do. If he does half of it, it would make a tremendous difference. And if you can stay with me, though, I want to come back and break that down, and I'll let you go as quick as I can. Can you do that?
Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed.
All right, stay there, ladies and gentlemen. Liberty Roundtable Live on your favorite talk station with Pete Sepp from NTU.org.
Proclaiming liberty across the land. You're listening to Liberty News Radio.
You- USA News, I'm Corey Myers. The 45th president of the United States expected to be booked into the Fulton County, Georgia jail today. Donald Trump reiterated his plans to turn himself over on criminal charges, saying on his social media site yesterday that he's proudly surrendering this afternoon. He faces racketeering and a dozen other counts connected to interference in the 2020 Georgia election. All eight candidates in last night's GOP presidential debate are vowing to reverse Bidenomics in the U.S., Florida Governor Ron DeSantis.
We must reverse Bidenomics so that middle-class families have a chance to succeed again. We cannot succeed as a country if you are working hard and you can't afford groceries, a car, or a new home, while Hunter Biden can make hundreds of thousands of dollars on lousy paintings.
A man who opened fire on Pittsburgh police dead following an hours-long standoff and an extremely active shooting situation. The shooting started Wednesday morning after deputies tried to serve an eviction notice to a man in Pittsburgh's Garfield neighborhood. That incident turned into a barricade situation for several hours until the suspect was killed. The fate of the so-called Texas floating border wall is now in the hands of a federal judge. The system of buoys is being blasted by critics who call it a political stunt. The former head of Customs and Border Protection says this lawsuit brought by the Justice Department might be the tipping point in the fight between Texas and the federal government. China banning all seafood imports from Japan after Tokyo started releasing treated radioactive water into the Pacific Ocean. China says the seafood ban is to protect customers from what it called Japan's selfish and irresponsible act. This is USA News.
To your left, our new exhibit, Monarchs of Springfield. And right here, we have our empty tour guide stand.
The last time Bryn hired someone is ancient history.
Sir, excuse me, that's not part of the exhibit.
They need
Sir,
tour guides who know the museum ropes.
Hey, kid, you like wearing khakis? I got a job for you.
Indeed can help them hire great people fast.
I need Indeed.
Indeed you do. You can schedule and conduct virtual interviews all from your employer dashboard. Visit Indeed.com/credit and get $75 towards your first sponsored job. Terms and conditions apply.
The extracurricular activities. The traffic. The nightly homework. The traffic. The finding time to eat dinner together as a family. The traffic. Back to school can be stressful. Thanks to Ziploc, meal prep doesn't have to be. New Ziploc bags with Stay Open design have a patented stand-up bottom that helps keep the bag upright and a top crease that folds and holds for easy filling, unlocking a second set of hands in the kitchen. If only it unlocked a second set of lanes. New Ziploc brand freezer and storage bags with Stay Open design from S.C. Johnson, a family company.
With news the networks refuse to use, you are listening to the Liberty Roundtable Radio Talk Show.
All right, Pete Sepp with me, National Taxpayers Union, NTU.org. At the bottom of the hour, they had Ron DeSantis saying, hey, we've got to reverse Bidenomics. Reverse Bidenomics. I agree with him, and I think he's done a lot of good to do so compared to many of the other candidates on the stage. But NTU.org has a breakdown on their scorecards of how they actually voted. We can't get all of them because Vivek is not a politician. Donald Trump wasn't there. But we can kind of gauge his record at least to some degree. What say ye about the candidates and their genuineness regarding economics? Pete?
Yes, this is NTU's annual rating of Congress based on every single roll call vote in Congress affecting taxpayers. This is taxes, spending, debt, regulation. We've done this scorecard now for over 40 years, and it is the most comprehensive picture of a member of Congress's voting record on fiscal issues. So let's start, for example, with Asa Hutchinson. He was actually in Congress for 5 years. He tended to score between 50 and 63% on our rating, all roll call votes affecting fiscal policy. We grade on a curve. He tended to earn B's and C's during his career in Congress. So, you know, middle of the pack, especially among Republicans. If you take a look at Ron DeSantis, he had several years in Congress, 6 years, in fact. He has 4 A's, a B plus, and a B to his credit. He scored as low as 68% on our rating, as high as 90%. That's a little better record than Asa Hutchinson, for sure. Mike Pence had a very long record in Congress. And when he mentioned that he had a very conservative record on fiscal policy, well, our rating system tends to bear that out. He has a total of 7 A grades, 3 B pluses, and a B on our rating scale. He scored as high as a 92% and as low as a 59, but he won our Taxpayers Friend Award for his voting record on several occasions while he was in Congress. Tim Scott, the U.S. Senator, he's also been in both the Senate and the House, and has a fair share of A's to his credit, 4 A grades. I see a 3 B pluses, a C plus, and a C. He scored as low as a 43%, not fantastic, but as high as a 95%, which is quite good. So you see there's a range of grades and scores in Congress from which you can evaluate some of the records that the candidates are touting on stage in these debates.
Setting aside the debate, setting aside Ron Paul's comments, setting aside the credit rating meltdown, set aside the countries going against the United States and saying they want their own currency, set aside everything for a second and tell me what we the people can focus on the most that'll have the biggest impact to make a difference to economically improve our situations as we the people. Pete, your thoughts?
Well, I think it can start on the local and state level to begin with. The fact is lots of things Washington, D.C. does can affect you. But then again, so can your local and state governments. And people are changing the way those governments operate every day, using ballot measures, holding their elected officials accountable when the school board wants to increase its budget by 15 or 20% with no justification. That kind of citizen activism by starting or joining a state or local taxpayer group is very important. I also think that asking the candidates themselves very detailed and intelligent questions, insisting that they give specifics on, for example, will they renew all or some of the portions of the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act of 2017 on the federal level? What would they do differently from the Fiscal Responsibility Act, the debt ceiling deal that recently passed? How much further would they go to reduce our federal debt? What are they going to do about entitlement programs, the big elephant in the room that hardly anyone wants to acknowledge in Congress or on the presidential campaign trail? You know, these are no longer the kinds of issues that were fun for walks to debate when Ross Perot was running for president back in 1992. These are all the most urgent issues in my lifetime or your lifetime, Sam, and especially in our kids' lifetimes. I mean, these are no longer things that we can afford to simply say, well, we'll deal with it next year. Next year is here.
Pete, we sure appreciate all you do, sir. Thank you so much. I know you're busy as could be, but you've always taken time over the last 25 plus years to really spend time with us and really provide think tank intelligence that can be brought to the table, setting aside partisan politics and truly saying, all right, what's good for we the people? What's good for the taxpayer? How do we make a difference in a meaningful way to lower taxes, but to pay for the proper role of limited constitutional government? How do we navigate these complicated factions everywhere and bring people together in meaningful ways? That matters, Pete, and we appreciate all that you do and tell your staff thank you, sir.
Always a pleasure, Sam. I look forward to talking again soon.
There he goes. Pete Sepp, NTU.org, ladies and gentlemen. Again, they partner on the national level all the way down to your local level. ladies and gentlemen, with you to bring research and information, to bring what's working in other places to a theater near you, so to speak. You know what? They have examples. What do you want to do? You want to work on something? Well, they've got an example somewhere else where they've been successful. Here's what they've done in other areas, and here's what you can do. And they bring all that reality check to you in meaningful, productive ways. They don't care, you know what, where you sit in terms of, you know, politics or partisanship or any of that stuff. They set all that aside, and I commend them for it because that's how we get things done. Ladies and gentlemen, they all attacked Vivek Ramaswamy, claiming that he has no experience. And in my opinion, ladies and gentlemen, all that means is they're out of ammunition. They're out of talking points. All right. Nikki Haley, for example, lost her cool. You could tell she kind of lost it. Nikki to Vivek, you have no foreign policy experience and it shows. Well, so let me get this right. Every candidate almost attacked Vivek saying he doesn't have experience. But what do you want to compare that to? Think of the state of the country, the state of the affairs of the country. All these people there that have all been politicians forever, their experiences ran us into a buzzsaw in America. We are melting down. So if that's what experience gets you, I don't want any part of it. Nikki Haley says, you don't have any foreign policy experience. Well, look where we are at foreign policy, Nikki. You're literally spending millions and millions and million, billions of dollars on the military-industrial complex. We're in over 130 nations, militarily speaking. War's about to break out. China and Russia are about to get together in a cabal against us, teaming up with North Korea. I mean, this is insanity. You want to just say, oh, Vivek's ideas because he disagrees with you, he has no experience? Well, what kind of experience do you have, and where has that got us? Shame on Nikki. Again, you claim that when you're out of argument. Oh, you have no experience. Pence blaming Vivek. Say, hey, you're too young. You're the youngest guy in the room. Oh, you're just like ChatGPT. You don't even know. Every one of those folks are literally out of arguments, and the proof is in the pudding. When you use that hominin attacks, they attack Vivek wrongfully. So he says this, I'm the only person on the stage that is not bought and paid for. I can say this, climate change is a hoax. Yeah. The climate change is a hoax. He's right about that. Now, Ramaswamy did very well, takes center stage, does a phenomenal job. Interestingly enough, Ron DeSantis kind of hung back. He didn't really do very much on the stage, folks. Now, I'm not downing him. I think he's better off than most on the stage. Ron DeSantis did a pretty good job, but he stuck pretty much to his record and to very peaceful general talking points. He didn't mix it up with anybody. They literally pointed all their attacks at Ramaswamy and didn't point at Ron DeSantis, which I find kind of interesting. Ron DeSantis, in my personal opinion, will slide in the polls, and Vivek will go up in the polls big time as a result on the hands down. Vivek Ramaswamy won the debate. Nikki was a distant second, ladies and gentlemen. The candidates frequently sparred with entrepreneur Vivek Ramaswamy. He painted himself as the young anti-establishment choice. Can you skip the break? The young anti-establishment choice. Anyway, I guess Mike Pence and Nikki Haley kind of came out and were really getting into it. But the problem is Mike just appeared like an old man. And Nikki Haley, the only woman on the stage, in my opinion, was kind of a disaster. Okay? And let me explain what I mean by that. Shame on Nikki. She said this. If you want to talk, ask a man. If you want to get anything done, ask a woman. Now, the reason that I bring that up is because Christie and Pence literally just sounded like a bunch of old, grumpy old men. So on one hand, she was right to say it because she was making a point, but she's wrong to say it because what if Vivek Ramaswamy got up there and he said, hey, Nikki, if you want to, you know, ask a, if you want to just talk or get nothing done, ask a woman. If you want to get something done, ask a man. the whole world would be absolutely beside themselves going, how dare you say that about a woman? He's a chauvinist pig. But somehow if you're a woman, you can say that like Margaret Thatcher and you're lauded and promoted and that was an awesome thing to say. And no, shame on you, Nikki. How dare you? As Vivek wisely pointed out, reverse racism is racism. Well, the same thing is true. Reverse genderism is chauvinistic. So now that it's the day of the woman, are we going to be chauvinistic women that shut down men? See, in society right now, men, are, white men especially, dads, whatever you want to say, they're all in bad shape. Everything seems to be against them. Is that right? And Nikki helped further that cause, and shame on her for doing so. The debate was moderated by Fox News, Brett Baer and Martha McCallum. They focused on a ton of topics, ladies and gentlemen, some worthy, some not worthy. The economy, I've been over that a lot. Climate change, I've been over that. Abortion, Nikki Haley and Mike Pence stood up the tallest on pro-life, and I commend them for it. They didn't really let Vivek speak out much about it, but as far as I understand, he's personally pro-life, but he doesn't believe we ought to have a federal mandate or a law. They talked about COVID-19 lockdowns. Vivek was the only one to double down and say they're completely bogus and need to stop. Everybody else kind of waffled. Gun control. The right to keep and bear arms is critical. Nobody stood up tall enough on that, in my humble opinion. Trump's upcoming trials. Ukraine funding. Vivek was the only one that said I would not increase funding for the Ukraine. Everybody else was like, oh, yeah, we got to promote the military-industrial complex. And then they ripped on Vivek saying he didn't have experience. And my response is, what about a foreign humble policy that George Washington had, that Ron Paul advocated for, that the Republicans used to be for? That's what Vivek was calling for. They talked about the southern border. The only one that would absolutely shut it down in bold fashion would be Vivek. Everybody else kind of, they talked about it, but not really. Education, Vivek said he'd shut down the education department. So did a couple of the other presidential hopefuls. But they talked about presidential age. That's where they mocked Vivek for being too young, but shame on those old men. They even brought up UFOs. And I don't mean to be crass about this, but look, debating UFOs now is a waste of time. We've got all of these other issues to talk about. Now, listen, there were several other issues that I find fascinating. Trump, the leading candidate in primary polls, chose to skip out on the debate, and he sat down with the debate with Tucker Carlson instead, and he eclipsed the whole debate. I kid you not. They literally skipped out on the debate, and people absolutely loved it. More support for Donald Trump during his interview with Tucker Carlson than anyone. President Trump blasted the indictments against them, calling them ridiculous. Nonsense. Anyway, it was pretty amazing how many people watched Donald Trump. And there was five highlights primarily from Tucker Carlson, Donald Trump's sit down. They say you have great people that are Democrats, Donald says. But I've seen what they do. Fox made a dumb move to dump Tucker Carlson. Well, by Donald skipping the debates and by Tucker Carlson not being on Fox, they literally handed their heads to them in terms of ratings. Fox relentlessly spent time promoting, listen to this, their phone apps and podcasting. I found that interesting. Fox News relentlessly promoted everything but radio. It's interesting. Radio stations, you ought to beware of Fox. They want to literally cut you out of the deal, okay? AM and FM radio stations. I love you and support you in every way that I possibly can. I know I got podcasts and things too, but I don't have any other way to get my word out. If more radio stations would take me, that'd be great. But I bring this up because Fox News is literally promoting podcasting big time and not their traditional news, traditional radio, traditional venues. That just shows how podcasting has taken the world by storm. Shame on Fox News also. They called it Democracy 2024. I hate to break this to the Fox team, but you know what? We don't have democracy in America. We have a constitutional republic, actually 50 of them, called the United States, bound together by contract. Constitutional contract. There are state contracts called the state constitutions, and there's a general contract, the general constitution. The United States is a plural term. We don't have democracy 2024. Shame on you for even suggesting such. It just shows how ignorant you are at the table. Now, Mr. Scott did a good job lamenting what he called the weaponization of the Department of Justice. He said he would fire Attorney General Merrick Garland and FBI Director Christopher Wray. Good for him for saying that. But Ramaswamy is ready to get rid of 75% of the government employee count. I like that a lot better. So Tim is on the right track. But Governor DeSantis called for the end of the weaponization of government. I agree with Ron on that, too. But again, the only one going far enough to make a difference. And Vivek pointed this out. Everybody else wants to just kind of play around the edges and talk about the change. He's ready to get it done. Literally, it was the Ramaswamy show. 6 months ago, ladies and gentlemen, the idea that Ramaswamy would even be on the stage and be standing center stage would have been laughable. But there he was, leaning into the fact and taking them all on like nobody's business. Now, I find it funny that Chris Christie called Ramaswamy an amateur. An amateur at what? The guy's an attorney. The guy's an incredible debater. The guy's a billionaire. The guy relates to immigrant parents. He's a first-generation American. How is he an amateur? An amateur at what? Running government? Well, for you folks that aren't amateurs, you've sure done a horrible job. That's what's got us into this mess. Anyway, they say that Ramaswamy is like Donald Trump in terms of substance and style. He stirred up a ton of controversy and everything else. They're downing him for that. They're basically saying, well, if you're so like Trump, why even run? Why not just have Trump? Well, my response is all the other candidates are just alike. They all want to promote the general Republican old guard school. Now, I find this whole thing fascinating. I just find it fascinating. Anyway, I support the pro-life stance of most of the candidates. Most seem to want nothing to do with the question of human behavior. Literally, they believe human behavior was causing climate change. Nobody really wanted that question. Nobody wanted to deal with it except for Vivek. He said it's totally bogus. It's a hoax. Mr. Pence was belligerent, sounded like an old man, and had to be repeated over and over and over. Stop, stop. Brett Baer, one of the moderators, had to repeatedly tell Pence, you got to stick to the time limits, sir, as if Pence was just too derelict to even realize there's a time clock and he's not the only one on the stage. An overwhelming majority of Americans absolutely support the tearing up of regulations to boost domestic energy production. I found that fascinating because it just shows Vivek has tapped into what the American people think like nobody's business. The candidates, except for Ramaswamy, took the view that former Vice President Mike Pence did the right thing. Okay? They basically said, hey, Pence did the right thing by rejecting the Donald. I don't see it that way. I think Vivek is right. You cannot weaponize the government against Donald Trump. That's what they've done. And Ramaswamy's not saying that Trump's squeaky clean. What he's saying is you cannot weaponize government. We've got to set this aside and get a handle on weaponized government and stop that. Okay? The bottom line is, look, people are sick of it. Vice President Pence, I don't think, did the right thing. They want you to believe it's either you go with Donald Trump and you just deny the election results, or you go with Mike Pence and you deny Congress looking into it. Neither are the truth. You know what? You can look into it and have Congress do so, and that's what Pence should have done. Pence should have said, hey, I'm going to demand Congress look at this. But he didn't. Shame on Pence. Pence pretends he's back in the Constitution. Donald says he's back in the Constitution. What's the truth? The truth is, constitutionally, Congress should have looked into election integrity issues, but they did not. Shame on them, and shame for Pence creating a faux argument to where Donald and Pence have two sides of the issue. Neither are correct. Bottom line, did anyone move the needle? If so, who? My answer is a resounding two people moved the needle, in my opinion, in the debate. Vivek set the record straight and moved the needle big time. America didn't know him. Now they will. And especially when he's in more debates. Everybody hates Vivek, meaning all the deep state. But the people in Trump love him. All right? Bottom line, ladies and gentlemen, is Vivek Ramaswamy handed their heads to them. Nikki Haley was a distant second. Nikki did pretty well in foreign policy. Not that I agree with her on it, but she was very well spoken regarding it. And she did a close second. She was very real on abortion. Mike Pence took the most pro-life stance of anybody else. Nikki basically said, we don't have the support, so let's take a softer approach, but let's still stand for pro-life. There was some nuanced differences there that I don't think matter too much. I do think pro-life is one of the quintessential issues that we should and need to deal with in America. I don't believe we can let it go as we have. They want you to believe that the Democrats have shown that it's a losing issue. I disagree with that entirely. I absolutely disagree. Okay. So it was a very interesting event, but I think the two people that moved the needle was Nikki Haley and Vivek. Vivek more than the others by a long ways. With Donald Trump and Tucker Carlson sitting it out and mocking them, and with Ramaswamy taking the day, I'm telling you right now, it was a win for Donald and a win for Vivek big time. I don't think it was a win for really anybody else. Nikki looked a little bit better, but not enough to really move the needle. But Vivek Ramaswamy moved the needle, and so did Donald, because their ideas are catching on. What about a Donald Trump Vivek Ramaswamy ticket? I don't know if they'll ever do it, but it would sure be good if they would. Or even a Vivek Ramaswamy / RFK Jr. ticket. I don't support all these old men running, all these governors. You know, you say, well, you can't run without experience. Well, Donald Trump didn't have experience, and he was one of the best presidents we've ever had. The best president in the 21st century. Vivek's right on that. Right? So I don't go for their experience clown claim anymore. It's a clown claim, folks. It's bogus. You gotta have experience so you can run the country into the ground and have everybody beside themselves wondering what to do about it. And then we're gonna say, if you have bold ideas, if you don't agree with us, then you don't have any experience, because we're out of ammunition to say anything else. Did anyone move the needle? I'm telling you right now, Vivek moved the needle. I'm telling you right now, he moved the needle. It was something to behold. For his first debate, the guy did incredible. We're going to watch him into the future. Now, there are concerns. He took money from George Soros to get his law degree. Many are going to criticize him for that. My response is he was young, and he took a scholarship from somebody related to Soros. I don't know that he really traced the dots as much as he just took a scholarship, which he's entitled to take. I don't know that I can hold him responsible for it necessarily. But if that's the least of the mistakes you've made, more power to you. We need somebody who can talk bold like Donald Trump, somebody who can talk bold like Vivek Ramaswamy. That is for sure. Then most importantly, we need somebody who can back up that talk with action, baby. We'll keep an eye on the ball just for you, because this is Liberty Roundtable Live. LovingLiberty.net. Spread the word. Share the love. Tell the tale. We declare this nation shall endure. God save the Republic of the United States of America.